welcome to Inside the Music, a podcast series from the Roanoke Symphony Orchestra. I'm Steve Brown, and Inside the Music is produced by the RSO and WVTF Public Radio in Roanoke, with yours truly as host. Today, we're talking with RSO Music Director and Conductor David Stewart Wiley about music to be performed on April the 8th at the Roanoke Performing Arts Theater in the Roanoke Civic Center, featuring an all-Beethoven program. For this concert in the Masterwork series, it's an all-Beethoven program. Some very famous, some not quite so, but the whole program opens up with the Seventh Symphony.
Well, Steve, this piece is just one of those powerhouse symphonies, one of the pieces that certainly for me as a musician made me want to go into conducting and music. The rhythmic drive of this piece, the kinetic energy found in this great A major symphony by Beethoven is something truly extraordinary. One could spend a lifetime analyzing all the details, but there's so much great stuff to discover and to rediscover in the seventh. And in recent years, as I've done the piece, I've chosen to connect the first and the second movements because I think they flow naturally, the drive from one into the other, and then take a pause and then go from the third movement, the fast scherzo, into the finale. So it provides a wonderful sense of forward momentum and drive, starting off with this hammer stroke that we hear in the first movement, this opening, the great A major symphony, with strings, winds, timpani making the stroke and woodwinds floating above. Now clarinet takes horns and flute. So wonderful what Beethoven does. This motor rhythm starts as it rises upward. And it tries again, one note higher. And now the woodwinds join in the ascent and this drive forward. So Beethoven now is moving us to the second lyrical theme. And a light floating violin, a little counter melody. Strings answer. Little trills of the birds. And now the strings.
And this is still just the introduction.
Exactly. Now listen just for the inner voice of the violas a little bit later. But no, he builds us again and we move forward with this drive. So I want us to move forward this long, wonderful introduction, which so nobly sets the stage for the opening vivace of the first movement. There's a wonderful transition where the strings in the upper woodwinds quite literally are passing the baton one line to the next. And this open E, just one single note, transforms itself into a little rhythmic motive. Yon ta dun dun ta dun dun goes bum 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 bim bim bim. And that becomes ba dum bum ba dum ba da, our main theme. So Beethoven here is taking the symphony in a new direction. He's taking a little kernel of a rhythmic motive and spinning it into the full first movement. First, he deconstructs it down into a single note. And now here comes our main motive. Adding layers.
Mm-hmm.
strings answer. Very genteel. Now look how he puts a roadblock in our drive forward in just a second. A little fermata. Coming up right here. And the drive. And we're off to the full nobility of the Seventh Symphony here. What is incredible is how he develops these ideas through dramatic silence, through imitation, fugal imitation, where this little motive quite literally is springing angularly around the orchestra, until finally, at the very end of this movement, we build up. And what I want to focus on now is something that in most recordings you don't get, because there are long pauses between the four movements. And listen to the way, if we play the end of the first movement into the beginning of this wonderful Allegretto, the second processional movement, how they're connected through harmony and also, in a sense, through rhythm. This is the very end, the apotheosis of the first movement of Beethoven's Seventh, leading into the second. He builds and builds, and now the horns. I'm going to pause for just a second. There is something remarkable what Beethoven does with the long, short, short, long, 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 short, short, long, long. So we have those small groupings, and then he expands that long, short, short, long, 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 short, short, long. So 2 plus 2, and then expanding it into 4. And if we phrase it that way, with the violas, cello, bass leading forward, it really has a wonderful sense of forward momentum to it. This is the movement that Beethoven, during the premiere, was forced to repeat on the spot. And I just imagine an audience in 2013. You know, we finish a movement, they start clapping, and they don't let us go on unless we go back and play a movement. I mean, a very, very different time. This is one of the most amazing movements. And as I do school concerts, this is one of the pieces that I get letters about quite often from this. There's something so visceral about this. I talked about this rhythmic drive and propulsion. It's found even in the purported slow movement. In fact, there are no slow movements in the four right. movements of the Seventh Symphony. So now let's hear it and listen for that long, short, short, long, long, and how he adds layers one after the other. First, a chord. And then Beethoven takes the dynamics to pianissimo, which we may not hear on the radio, because the sound is compressed. But it's pianissimo in performance. Okay, so there's our motive. Now, the next layer on top. Beautiful, almost Baroque, dark color. Sudden, all of the layers so beautifully fused together, and the first violins come to life quietly up on top with the motive. What's so remarkable about this movement is that the shapes take minutes to be created. Long, long lines. And Beethoven, with his innate sense of drama and contrast, gives us a section in major to contrast this dark, deep minor key, and gives us a fugue on these subjects, just lets it build. And let's listen to this swell as the horns, trumpets, and timpani join as it builds. So the procession is right in front of us and passing us on the street, and then begins to recede. And listen to this transition as we move to the major key with clarinet solo. And bassoons join. So beautiful, a place of safety, a place of respite from the tension of the minor processional going, a miraculous movement. And Beethoven, again, with his innate sense of drama and texture, gives us one of his fiery scherzo, a presto, fast tempo. Listen to the way that the timpani and the trumpets punctuate this fast-moving music in the relative key of F major. Here, the third movement opening of the Seventh Symphony. Here comes timpani trumpet. And he explodes. Huge contrasts from fortissimo to piano and pianissimo. Such amazing kinetic energy, the raw adrenaline that this music creates is quite extraordinary. And again, we have a wonderful contrasting middle section, the trio in the third movement, scherzo of this movement. And I'd like to focus on the transition from the end of the scherzo into the finale. It's quite breathless, and trust me, we're going to need every bit of intermission to recover our energy for the rest of the Beethoven program. This is a work that takes a lot out. We leave it on the field, so to speak. But here is the very end of the scherzo going into the finale, again to hear the connection, both rhythmic and harmonic. Finals farewell, and what's extraordinary about where Beethoven puts the accents, little sforzandi, and now the horns. Beethoven quite literally is flinging these little motivic elements throughout the orchestra. And listen to the angularity of this. Such exciting music to play, and also to watch visually as these lines move around the full symphony orchestra and really looking forward to it. We were listening to a live performance of the RSO from a couple years back, and the energy of this piece just is infectious in its way. Amazing piece, the Seventh Symphony.
And that's the entire first half of the program. The second half of the All Beethoven program is works that are not quite as familiar as the Seventh Symphony, starting off with the choral piece, A Calm Sea and Prosperous Voyage. And a calm sea is not necessarily a good thing back in Beethoven's day.
Absolutely. One could imagine the utter terror of a sailor. I mean, imagine being out in the ocean where your only means of getting to shore is a wind. And Beethoven here setting two different poems by Goethe in 1814, 1815 was really giving us enormous contrast. The unsettled nature of being out on the ocean where the sails are hanging limp and in a fog. And from the fog, the wind begins to billow the sails and the sailor reaches the shore. It's a wonderful metaphor. And one of the reasons, Steve, why I chose Calm Sea and Prosperous Voyage and the choral fantasy, or the piano fantasy, as one could also call it, is they are both connected to the great Ninth Symphony, which would be in many ways the culmination of his output. The Calm Sea ends up being in the same key, D major, and this wonderful triumphant sound where the sailor sights land, the sea's billowing, and Geschwinde, 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 as sung in German, this wonderful swiftly, swiftly, as the chorus is singing, moves us to land. I thought it would be important for our listeners to hear an English translation of the German, because we will perform both works by Beethoven in the original language. And the translation of The Calm Sea is, "Deep stillness rules the water. Without motion lies the sea. And sadly, the sailor observes smooth surfaces all around. No air from any side. Deathly, terrible stillness. In the immense distances, not a single wave stirs." Beethoven, in his genius, is able to capture that sense in several ways. Number one, the calm sea is represented by the strings with open, pure D major sonorities and Tiefe Stille, deep stillness, as the chorus sings, rules the water. And then when the chorus sings in the immense distances, he plays a cruel trick on the choral sopranos by making the ladies jump up to a high A above the staff, and the basses are down more than three octaves apart. And trust me, this is an enormous distance to tune. It's a hard one to tune for the sopranos to find that pitch and center and then hold it for three bars, quite frankly. And so he is tone painting with this. So that's the first part. That's the calm sea. And then from the fog and the stillness where the waves aren't stalling, all of a sudden, the celli, we start rising up. And the translation is, the fog is torn, the sky is bright, and Eolus releases. Eolus, of course, god of the winds, releases the fearful bindings. The winds whisper. The sailor swiftly begins to move. Geschwinde, geschwinde, swiftly, swiftly. The waves divide, as do, incidentally, the choral parts. And then the distance nears, already I see land. And if this sounds again like some of the triumphant music of the Ninth Symphony, it's partially because it's in the same key of D major, but Beethoven, with this great Goethe text, is really tone painting. So let's hear the opening. First, the stillness and the choral entering. The vastness of this land out on the ocean is so beautifully conveyed in Beethoven's introduction. Without motion lies the sea now. Uno regum. and sadly the sailor observes smooth surfaces. Now listen to what Beethoven does. We have little plucked strings behind the chorus. No air, silences. A little artistic license there. Deathly stillness. And then terrible. Now listen, here's where we spread the chorus apart. Immense distance. And it's all well and good in this commercial recording we're listening to. But to do it live with 150 voices and chorus to tune it requires great focus and concentration. And how we find the, kind of the inner zen for the chorus while conveying this terror of the lack of wind. So we move from this world to the prosperous journey. And again, the two Goethe poems could not be any different, and Beethoven sets them. Here we have kind of a rollicking 6-8 feel, the rhythm of hunting music, of Mozart and so forth. Here's the transition as we move forward where the strings and winds rise up and the fog is torn and the sky is bright. Here is the prosperous journey, very opening. And the fog is lifting. And then with one huge swell, the sails billow. The winds billow the sails. So here we have the prosperous journey and the very end, the distance nears, already I see land, and we come down firmly on solid ground with a D natural, the home key of our piece. Let's hear just the very end. The land, das Land. And now they go to shore.
As a former sailor, I felt like that finally getting the show sometimes.
That's right. We've taken the Dramamine going through there.
Liberty!
You know, I was thinking as preparing this piece, much like other great settings having to do with the sea, Debussy with La Mer, I mean, apparently before he wrote that, he had never visited the ocean. And also with Beethoven here, at this point, some say that Beethoven had never actually been on the ocean. So
I don't think he ever got there.
Yeah.
The Bonn to Vienna, that was pretty much it.
But for goodness sakes, if you're a great composer, you can set it and express your imagination. And speaking of imagination, the so-called choral fantasy is such a unique, quirky, wonderful creation. It is a choral, orchestral, and piano work for all those forces, but the chorus only comes in the final few minutes of the work. Essentially, it starts off with what would have been in Beethoven's day an improvisation with a piano cadenza, again, unusual for its time. So the piano begins our journey in Beethoven's original in C minor. And one question one has to wrestle with as a performer, in this case, I'm not conductor, but I'll be pianist for the choral fantasy. And I will be doing the opening piano cadenza. In that, I also incorporate elements from the rest of the All Beethoven program. And the history of such a cadenza, quite frankly, is that Beethoven would have improvised it and would have incorporated elements from the other parts of the program and, quite frankly, a transition into this extraordinary work. It is a series of theme and variations. And as we progress through listening to this, listeners, I think, will find a remarkable connection and resemblance to the familiar Ode to Joy theme from the Ninth Symphony. But this is a different kind of experimentation. The text that Beethoven uses is one that really ends up being an ode to music. And I wanted to read a translation because, again, we will have the chorus sing it in the original German. Our wonderful chorus master, Dr. John Hugo, will be conducting, and I will be down at the Steinway. And listen to the text. And here, as a listener, if this sounds familiar to anything for the Ode to Joy, but beguiling, sweet, and lovely is the resonance of our life's harmonies. An awareness of beauty begets flowers which bloom eternally. Peace and joy move in concord like the rhythm of waves. All that is alien and uncouth is sublimated. And notice the text here, like the rhythm of waves. Here's a connection to Calm Sea and Prosperous Voyage. And then the second part, when the magical sound holds sway and the sacred import is clear, beauty is necessarily formed. Night and tempest turn to light. Peace without and bliss within. Rain for the lucky one. Yet the spring sunshine of the arts draws light from both. The greatness which permeates the heart blooms again with fresh beauty. When the spirit exalts, a spirit chorus reverberates forever. Then take with joy, O noble spirits, the gift of high art. When love and power unite, almighty grace endows mankind. So here we are, years before the Ninth Symphony now, and Beethoven is already trying to change the world with his music. Peace and love and joy and all of the spirit, the power of music to transform humankind is already present in this. And in a sense, this 20-minute work, The Choral Fantasy by Beethoven, is a journey from darkness to light. We start off with the dark tones of C minor, and by the end, the brightness, the joy, the hope of C major. So in a nutshell, that is our journey, with incredible creativity in between. Here is the opening, the piano cadenza of The Choral Fantasy, C minor, dramatic, dark. Rising up and down like dark waves. Like an aria, the right hand of the piano in parallel motion, little thirds. And our journey. Impossible, and especially with time constraints, can't play everything in this opening cadenza. But let's move forward to the very end. The piano makes a flourish upward, and we begin with something that Beethoven would use in the Ninth Symphony, this idea of recitative. It's an operatic term, a flexibility of melody, yom, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum, as it rises upward. This sets the stage for our series of variations. Beethoven 5. and now the recitative. And the piano responds. As a form of contemplation, almost like, oh friends, not these tones. And now the upper strings come in, seconds, violas. And the piano again interjects. And woodwinds get the march. And a cannon. And a horn call announces our variations, kind of calling over the mountains, this alpine idea. Now listen to the familiarity as a variation of the Ode to Joy. Piano goes off in his own way. And again, without giving away too much, a series of remarkable, colorful variations until finally the chorus stands, we get the full tune Beethoven in his full fruition. This is not a training piece for the Ode to Joy. It is a great work in and of itself and worthy of the final spot on our All Beethoven program. It's wonderful to have this collaboration with the chorus and the orchestra, and it's humbling to sit down at the piano and have the privilege of playing this music. So I hope that in the cadenza you hear other little shadows of the rest of the program while respecting the integrity and the genius of Beethoven's cadenzas. And it is truly a testament to life, to music, and the power of art to change our lives. And quite frankly, that's what we're all about at the Roanoke Symphony, and I am grateful for the opportunity to do that with my colleagues.
Well, we have just about a minute left. Care to talk a little bit about the, the final program in the Masterwork series?
Indeed. We come back home to one of the great American works by Aaron Copland, his Pulitzer Prize-winning score to Appalachian Spring, the ballet for Martha Graham. And we do the original instrumentation and the beautiful intimacy of Schaffman Hall in May. Shortly thereafter, we will be gearing up for our exciting 60th anniversary, our diamond anniversary season with the RSO. So keep your ears open and ready for some things we promise to amaze and inspire next year, really deliver the unexpected to our region through the Roanoke Symphony's Diamond Anniversary season. So again, thanks to all of our faithful listeners, to our sponsors, our supporters, Grand Home Furnishings, who make these live broadcasts possible. We are so grateful to them and to all of our sponsors and listeners. And so this one's for you. For those of you who love Beethoven, we're excited for the second half and we're excited for the upcoming months and years.
And thank you, Maestro David Stewart Wiley.
All the best.
And thank you for listening to this edition of Inside the Music with RSO conductor and music director David Stewart Wiley. There's a full concert schedule at the symphony website, rso.com. Until the next time we go Inside the Music, I'm Steve Brown. Take care.